everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. And I am what you call a live stream virgin. This is my first time ever live streaming, so I ask you to please forgive us if there's any issues. But we are here today to talk about Donald Trump being invited to speak at the Libertarian Party National Convention. Here's a quote. For 50 years, we've been trying to get our candidates on the main stage with major party POTUS candidates, and we finally succeeded in bringing one to our stage. We will do everything in our power to use this incredible opportunity to advance the message of liberty. That was from the chair, Angela Mercado. So, why is Trump doing this? This was Trump's official statement. If libertarians join me and the Republican Party, where we have many libertarian views, the election won't even be close. Obviously, we will discuss this real quick. How did this come to be? Well, first of all, in 2022, the Mises or Mises caucus, and they lean right, took control of the party. And that was because they were fueled by frustration over the Gary Johnson, Bill Weld nomination. I have yet to meet an actual libertarian who will tell me that Bill Weld is a libertarian. And they felt that many of the libertarian positions were compromised. And they did not capitalize on the anger over the COVID-19 restrictions. Again, Angela Mercado is the LP national chair. She said she needs to focus on creative growth and finding new allies during her speech at the California convention this year. And I can proudly tell you this conservative was there, and I got to meet everybody who was there, and I was very impressed and very respectful. This was the best field of candidates I've ever seen in my adult life. However, RFK Jr. was there. We're talking Trump, but before Trump, it was all about RFK Jr. and the libertarians. But in April, RFK Jr. put the speculation of running for the libertarian nomination to rest after he said he could gain ballot access without the party's help. And to talk about this with us today is Tyler Collins. He is the chair of the San Diego Libertarian Party, and the beautiful Martha Bueno, una cubana from Florida. She is a libertarian activist, and we welcome them both to the stage. Hello, Martha. Hello, Tyler. Martha, you need to unmute yourself there.
So sorry about that.
That's it. Well, I want you to take a few seconds to introduce yourself, beginning with Martha. I'd like the audience to know who is going to be talking about the Libertarian Party here. And Martha?
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on. So, yes, beyond being a libertarian from Miami, I ran I was the vice chair of the Libertarian Party of Miami-Dade County for 4 years, and I also I was elected to a seat here in Miami-Dade County as a community council member. During my time as a libertarian, I started off just as a member, then became vice chair of that, and then finally chair. And then what most people know me from, I ran as Miami-Dade County Commissioner in 2022, coming in second place to the Republican in a four-person race. I got 22% of the vote, running as an independent because I left the party, and a lot of people heard about that too. So thank you again for having me. This is going to be a great conversation.
To the audience, I hope I don't embarrass Martha here, but she's being a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for, shy here. Did you get any refund requests from your OnlyFans video? And before y'all think the wrong thing, I'll let Martha explain that, because that was a great, great creative, well, I don't want to say gimmick, but kind of like a great creative
angle. It was a gimmick.
So
one of the tactics I used in my campaign, again, I was running against the seasoned Republican who was also, he was a House representative for the state of Florida. So we're talking about a big politician, very well connected with the machine of the Republican Party. And so I needed to get some media attention. I needed to get my voice, my name out there. So I ran an OnlyFans campaign where I put up four campaign videos, one which was too spicy for OnlyFans. And I got a lot of attention both here locally, nationally, and even internationally. So it was fun times, but that is unfortunately what I am known for as well.
And Tyler, when should we expect your OnlyFans campaign run here? I'm kidding. Tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
Yes, well, thank you so much. Well, unlike Martha, you know, I don't yet have my OnlyFans, so we'll see if I need to do that for a campaign. But so my name is Tyler Collins. This is the second time I've been on Grumblings Media. So thank you very much, William and Big John, for having me back. So I am the chair of the San Diego Libertarian Party. So that is a county party in the state of California. So happy to be here.
Outstanding, outstanding. So I hope y'all were able to hear my intro. I gave the politically correct reasons and the PR statements. But the reality of this is some of the real reasons that Trump may be addressing the Libertarian National Party is anti-establishment movements such as Robert F. Kennedy, what Trump has seen him do. Using the Libertarian Party convention, he might gain support from libertarians and two-party skeptical voters. This is also possibly a counter to the potential voter fraud that some people believe may happen in close battleground states. And I preface that with, I was born and raised in Panama as an American citizen. I've seen corrupt elections. I also read have seen aspects, it was decades, generations ago, of Jimmy Carter's, I want to say, Blue Panel Commission that talked about how to create fair elections. And Jimmy Carter took this template to every other nation he sat there and oversaw elections, only to throw it in the garbage in 2020 because some of the things he talked about there, or the commission did, were being done in the 2020 election, yet he said it was an above board. I'm not here to dispute that. I'm saying there's a segment out there that believes that. So it's not just about close battleground states, but he may be looking at it from that perspective. And let's be honest, you libertarians are important. So is the Green Party. So are others. You libertarians are the third biggest party in the country, but you should be courted. And any smart politician should court you. However, I would have agreed to that previous years ago because I wasn't always happy. And I'm not knocking them, but in my belief, some of the candidates were not perceived as actual candidates. And I see your slate this year, very, very impressive. A self-made a millionaire going from zero and financially to being in the 1%. Doctors, old dinosaurs that still have a voice to be heard. They're all legitimate, and they all have a message to send. So with that, let's get down to this, okay? Many swing states favor Libertarian Joe Jorgensen over Biden's margin of victory, which makes you guys a potential spoiler. In 2016, Gary Johnson took 3% of the popular vote. Martha, does this mean Libertarians have the power to persuade Trump on their policies because they believe they can actually determine the winner of this election?
I think that's what you're watching happen right now. So that's exactly what I've heard is in play here. Trump approached Angela. I thought originally that it was the other way around, but it turns out that his team approached Angela to get to the convention. And she said that, yes, that he could go, but there were certain points that, he needs to deal with. So, I mean, I haven't heard it directly from her. Don't quote me on this, but it seems that he will be hearing 10 points that libertarians are interested in. And remember, Angela, the only thing she can do is bring him to convention. She can't make us vote for him. So he's going to have to win us over. And I think if she gave him 10 points that the Libertarian Party really cares for, he at least has the game plan and he knows what he has to do to win us over. I don't know that he can, but he's welcome to try.
And what are your thoughts? You think it's Trump's afraid that you guys are the spoiler, Tyler, or does he just want to court and counter RFK Jr. here? Because remember, Trump probably thinks he lost the election through complete voter fraud versus, hey, these guys are going to make or break me. So which one do you think it is and your thoughts on that?
Great. Thank you for that. I think going back to 2020, I've heard personally from a lot of Republicans that they view the Libertarian Party as really the spoiler for Trump in the 2020 election. And so I think this time around, Trump is going to do whatever he can to court the Libertarians. Whether you call that scared or just seeking more voters, I think he's going to do that. That's definitely, what his team is about. So
just to piggyback on Tyler for a minute, if I may, Trump did an interview with Laura Ingraham where he said that the Libertarians spoiled it for him. So I think that it's more than being scared. I think he's very well aware that we covered that spread and that we are that deciding vote. And if he wants to win, he's going to need to get us on his side.
And I stand corrected. I did not know that. That answers that question, that he does think so. That's probably the biggest reason. I think it's a great move. Now, speaking of, and I apologize. John always corrects me. I always say Mises. It's Mises, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mises. Okay. Tomato, tomato, whatever you like.
Not the John. That man's on me like no tomorrow when I do that. But the Mises, here's a quote from your former chair of the Libertarian Party. The Mises Caucus has demonstrated that they are a Make America Great Again operation. That is from Nicholas Sarwak. And Sarwak led the National LP from 2014 to 2020. It's time to end their involvement in the Libertarian Party. Is there any truth to that in terms of, you know, sometimes where there's smoke, there's a little fire, or is that just somebody making something up because he doesn't like the direction this party has gone? Tyler, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, Nicholas Sarwark certainly is not a fan of the Mises Caucus. Now, in terms of what the party overall needs to do, I think that there's, you know, rational people on both sides, whether you're Mises or you're, you know, classical liberal caucus. I think one thing that I've heard, though, is that perhaps there could have been more consultation of, you know, the individual constituents like county affiliates and such before a decision like this was made. Now, as Larry Sharp had pointed out, there is a process which, you know, per national bylaws was followed. So that seems not to have been violated there. But, you know, I think a lot of county affiliates in particular would have been, and candidates, you know, would have really liked to have known this was coming before, you know, they just saw it, whatever. This is the headline. Trump is coming. So.
So Martha, to piggyback on that, first of all, your thought on what Nick has to say, but to piggyback on that, this isn't the first time I've seen, usually through social media, of somebody within the party below Angela complaining that this is something she's doing out of the blue, not consulting. What's your take on Sarwak and what he said? And then what's your take on Angela, you know, kind of springing these things? It seems like she's on an island unto herself at times.
Well, so, okay. First of all, on what Nick Sarwark said, first, he's probably right. I mean, I trust his opinion on this because he was there at the time. And there's, I mean, but it doesn't even matter, right? It doesn't matter if we're infiltrated by the Republicans or not, because at the end of the day, that is what I would do if I was a Republican operative. I would try to infiltrate the Libertarians. It has to stand on our principles and what we believe in, and that's what we're selling to people. So whether they tried to infiltrate us or not, that's the right move if you're on the other side. So it really doesn't make a difference one way or the other. We need to make sure that the people that are in the party and are making these decisions are libertarian. So what happened with the Mises Caucus? There was a takeover and we have no idea. You know, they lost a lot of support, unfortunately, for the party. They lost a lot of members and they've lost a lot of revenue. So regardless of the reason behind it, the party has suffered. And I think that that's what we should be focused on. It's already years past. We're 4 years past that 2020 moment. We need to get over it and either figure out our way forward as a party or call it a day. But I mean, this back and forth of who caused what, it's been 4 years, guys. Come on. It's time to move on. And as far as Angela, you know, inviting Trump, I don't see why this invitation is any different than any other. It's not like any other guest or speaker at the party has had to have a clearance from the party. That's not how it works. It's never worked that way. And so there's a convention committee, and I'm sure that somebody on the convention committee had to have approved this. So I don't think it's so far out of left field. I mean, Angela and I certainly have not seen eye to eye for a long time, if ever. And I think that, you know, we have to criticize what there really is to criticize and promote and applaud the things that I think are done well. And let's be honest, the Libertarian Party is on fire. Like you said, we had RFK. Now we have Trump showing up. We are in the news. I've been in this party long enough. I'm old enough to remember when I used to say, I'm a libertarian, and people used to be like, oh, what? So at least now they know what we are. And you know what? We might not like it, but any publicity is good publicity, especially for the millions and millions of people out there who vote that have no clue that there's more than two parties. So at least they're hearing about us. And I can say, as somebody who's been in this party for a while, that's better than the alternative. Trust me.
Well, take it from a conservative here. I have seen libertarians go into the Republican Party saying they want to infiltrate it. I just shake my head. You're not going to influence that many people. And I kind of expect the same thing if anybody tries to do that in the Libertarian Party. But here is a word of warning. You guys are generationally behind the two major parties. I don't say that in a good or bad way. I'm saying you guys are going through trials and tribulations they went through. But I can tell you now, when leadership begins to do things without informing the masses, that's the beginning of the separation and destruction of the party. Libertarians always get angry at you for always throwing all us Republican Party members under the same umbrella, because you guys loathe, if you're a classical liberal and I call you a Mises libertarian, you know, and we battle as well, the grassroots conservatives, and those are the types of battles we fight and we keep losing. The Republican Party at its core is made up of grassroots conservatives, but leadership with the money and the power is made up of the elites. And this is how it begins. So I applaud those for questioning Angela, not because I would disagree with the decision she made, but there's a process. And when somebody takes over that process and does it as they please, then that's going to cause problems long term. So short term, it may not be, but long term, this could become an issue.
I got to push back on you there. Yeah, I got to push back on there, because that's the thing. Libertarians are not Republicans, and we don't have the same values. So we believe in a decentralized organization. We believe in the power of individuals. We don't have a top-down system. We are not the Republican Party. We don't have a leader. We don't look to Angela to be like, can we please do this thing? And she says, yes, you may. Each chapter is empowered to do exactly what they need to do and spread the message that they need to spread. So I don't think, again, I do believe that there's a lot of libertarians that are upset with this. And you know what? It sucks. It does suck to have the lead competitor for you know, the office that you want to show up. It's terrible, but we're constantly preaching the you know, free market principles. And this is a clear example of libertarians showing their free market principles, because we're going to bring our biggest competitor to that stage, and then we're going to hear him out, and then we are going to be able to counteract every one of those points. And so this is an opportunity for us to invite everybody in America to pay attention to what our guys are going to say, because you're going to be really impressed with it. Because honestly, we have a tremendous group of people up on that stage. And there is really nobody up on that stage that if we pick, we're going to be like, that's a terrible choice. They are all some of the best humans I know. They're really the salt of the earth. And so honestly, I am thrilled that more Americans are going to be hearing about us, because we've been trying their way for 50 years. And for 50 years, we've been ignored. So this is fantastic. I am so happy that this is happening, because again, we're libertarians. If we were easy, we wouldn't be libertarians. We'd just be infiltrating the Republican Party and trying to take over. We want freedom in our lifetime. That is our goal. And that's what we're doing. And you know what? Trump can't run again after this. So we may hand him 2024, but 2028, you know, watch us. We're coming for you.
Very ambitious, very ambitious. we will always agree to disagree, because there's always a hierarchy when it comes to politics. That's what our founding fathers, I'll get into that in a bit. Mm-hmm. But I get your point on individualism. It has its pros and cons in my eyes, but I understand. Tyler, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in, kind of echo. I want to agree and disagree with some things that Martha said. So I want to agree, you know, the decentralized revolution, liberty in our lifetime, I'm totally with you on that. As the county chair, I'm constantly trying to empower, you know, people in different parts of the county, you know, organize with your neighborhood, you know, people in your community, and build up from there. Regardless if I, you know, agree, you know, or feel strongly about a particular position, you know, that you want to push, it's decentralized. With that being said, though, I think there is an inherent conflict, which is showing itself in the current structuring of the party, in that we have, you know, this decision is being made, a highly controversial decision, without the people on the ground, the grassroots people, feeling necessarily like they've had any input to this. And so I think as William said, right, this is, as soon as you have this kind of stratification between the grassroots and the leadership is when things start to topple over. And I think we definitely need to come back to some sort of way where we can feel like those at the top of the, you know, LNC hierarchy are held accountable or feel like the people are in tune with them. So I would, you know, push that.
Did he just beat you down, Martha? I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm trying to get some conflict going. We're all too nice, but I'm kidding. To Martha's point, I do believe that is one of the strongest aspects I've learned of libertarianism is individuality. I just know that in life, it's not black and white, and teamwork in a hierarchy has to come into play at times because you are counting on those people under you to help support your decisions. And I know this at the grassroots level, that's one of the easiest spots where if they feel they've been betrayed, next time you call, they just won't answer and you've lost a potential member. So, and Martha, you were chair. So I'm sure you went
nice
to that.
Chair.
Yeah. Okay. Vice chair. But I see both points. So I don't want to belabor that real quick. Cause I tend to get caught up on one topic. We'll be here for an hour, but moving on here, I wanted to read something to you. So in doing my research, I always read through various articles, documents, whether it's a site or opinions. And I kept coming across this, under its leadership, and these are my own words, but I just paraphrasing, under its leadership, the party has become less traditional libertarian and more Make America Great Again friendly and more interested in mainstream politics. Now, I think I kind of know the answer based on what we've already said. But Martha, true or not, and if this is so, what was the catalyst? Was it the fact that the classical liberals just couldn't win or they were unorganized? In your mind, or let me ask you this way. What made you align with the Mises Caucus, or are you not a Mises Caucus?
I've never been part of any caucus. I've just been straight libertarian. And, you know, it's one of those things where the factions in the party, it depends. If you are only on social media, you're going to believe what you see on social media.
Right,
as somebody who's been to a lot of conventions, who's been to state conventions, who's been to national many times, I can tell you that those caucuses really don't mean much at the overall amount. Did they mean something this time? Did we see a lot of pushback on the internet from the Mises Caucus? Did we see a lot of infighting? Absolutely. And it just seems that was there to tear us down and to cause division within the party. And maybe that's where you can see potentially what Nick was talking about with, you know, some type of infiltration. I do think that there was some hostility within the party. I do think that it was, you know, I was a victim of that hostility. So I do think that there was a lot of just pushback. But at the end of the day, that's just a temporary thing, and all you do is you disengage. In my case, I pushed back myself, and I exited the party for a time being. And, you know, there's just not that enthusiasm anymore from, you know, that type of behavior. I'm slowly dipping my feet back into the party, and I'm seeing that it's just lots of people welcoming and being like, hey, let's get to work. Let's roll up our sleeves. Let's get this party started. Let's really do the work. So, you know what? At the end of the day, we are all here pushing for more freedom in our lifetime, freedom right now, tangible. You know, meanwhile, while we're fighting amongst each other, we have the government at our throats. We literally just had Roger Ver arrested for his cryptocurrency, for trying to leave the country. He paid the U.S. government the right to leave. And the government 10 years later is like, nope, sorry, you paid the wrong amount. Mind you, he paid professionals to do this. So, and now he's in jail in Spain, hopefully not being extradited to the United States. But I mean, we're talking about government. They just signed more FISA. You know, they're spying on us even more without a warrant. All of these things are happening, and we're busy fighting about which caucus you belong to. Like, no, we don't have time for that, children. That's something that we can do when we're at peace and we can be fighting with each other all day, every day. In the meantime, you know, just you don't have to like these people. You just have to work with them.
I love that attitude, Martha. That's the attitude that I've tried to bring as chair. Like you, I'm not a member of any caucus. And my goal was, you know, to bring the fight against the state. We need to bring liberty in our lifetime. And this caucus or that caucus, again, we're all more aligned with each other than we are with the statists. Mm-hmm. So, again, I really appreciate that focus. And I think that's, I'm happy to hear
that.
I'm
glad we're aligned. Yeah. We're supposed to have a debate here, Tyler. Come on.
All right. I have a question here from the audience. From Back to the Stone Age. He sounds like a real masochist. Is Tyler or Martha afraid that people being introduced through Trump to the LP will think that libertarians are nothing more than Make America Donians who smoke weed? Tyler.
Magadonians. Well, I haven't heard that word before, but I think I get the gist of it. Yeah, this is a concern that, in particular in California, this is a very heavily Democrat state. And as the chair of the party, if I want to bring new people into the party, it's either going to be independents, Republicans, or Democrats. Given the demographics of the state, if you just take a random guess, it's probably going to be a Democrat. So the way I'm – my concern about this, the Trump thing, is that the media is going to paint – and they actually already have been painting this picture, but I think they're going to continue, you know, painting this picture – is that Trump attends LNC convention, and now all of a sudden, Libertarian Party and Trump are just seen as very closely connected. And that's not going to help with me as someone in California trying to reach out to, let's say, more liberty-oriented Democrats. That's my concern.
And Martha, let me repeat this. So are you afraid that people being introduced through Trump to the Libertarian Party will think that libertarians are nothing more than Magadonians who smoke weed? I guess what the question is saying is people who come to the party through Trump, they're just going to be pretty much the useless libertarians who'd rather smoke weed than anything else that's truly helped change and bring freedom to the country.
Listen, you guys, I feel like we're having two completely different conversations here. First of all, everybody's already thought that libertarians are just Republicans who smoke weed. This is something that we've – or Democrats who know math, okay? It's one or the other. These are the two things that have been said for a while. So, hey, take your pick. As long as they're talking about us, guys, we're winning. Also, we have to focus here. We're having this conversation like it matters. Realistically, this is an election year and we're trying to get votes. We're not trying to recruit the next Justin Amash or Ron Paul. We are trying to get more votes. And it's like, no, we want votes, but we don't want your vote. No, not yours. I'm sorry. You don't understand what libertarian is, so please don't vote for us. Like, stop gatekeeping the votes. We just need more people to hear about us. And lots of Republican conservatives are like, I love liberty. I love to pay less taxes. I want more personal freedoms. And I really don't like Trump. Well, guess what, guys? Now they've heard about us and they're like, okay, I'm going to vote for you guys. So why not? And same for Democrats, because I've seen Democrats go like, you know what? I've been a lifelong Democrat, but this is not working. Things are not getting any better. And so let me find out the other options. And I will never vote for Trump. So they're coming to the party. This is a net positive. I think we're going to see it. I hope that our candidates this year get more votes than Joe Jorgensen did last time. And if the strategy is we all help Trump and then 2028, we inherit that position, that also works for me. So you know what? I think that we...
Clarify, please. You said when we help Trump. Are you saying libertarians voting for Trump? Or you said when we share. You said when. So you're okay with that then? It's not good or bad. It just.
I think that there's strategy here. So if nothing else, I am known for being pragmatic. And let's be honest, there is a 0.000 chance that we will make it to the White House this year. Nobody knows. Unfortunately, none of our candidates have name recognition. None of them have the kind of money to be able to go after Trump. Now, again, I don't want to be like, oh, my God, Martha, you just don't know. I worked for Gary Johnson's campaign. I volunteered for it. I volunteered for Joe Jorgensen's, and I ran my own campaign. I have some experience here, and I can tell you, even with an OnlyFans campaign, even with international media on myself and my positions, it was not enough. You need the money. You need the machine. You are not going to get 81 million votes or whatever Biden got last time, this time around, unfortunately. So we have to be pragmatic here. What is going to move the freedom needle forward? And that's always the thing. What is going to move that Overton window towards more freedom? And what is it? Maybe we make some concessions this time around. I am not advocating for it. I am not advocating for it.
Right.
I am just saying, worst case scenario, we might have to, you know, think of our options. And yes, voting for Trump is, it's not going to sit well with most libertarians. However, if we can get that media attention and Trump supporting us and showing that the future is not the Republican Party, it's within the Libertarian Party, that might be a concession that a lot of libertarians might be willing to do.
Tyler, before you respond, I want you to respond to what Martha said. But Martha, I love the fact you are pragmatic. I'm a very pragmatic person. And when you bring pragmatism into the room, people always, always look at it as the half, as a glass half empty versus half filled. Tyler, Martha was very pragmatic there in terms of her points of the odds of the presidential candidates making it to the White House being libertarian, the potential positive gain if libertarians help Trump this go round. What will they get out of this? Now, here's my counterpoint to Martha is Trump will be gone. You know, so what's Trump care about helping the libertarians back with the next cycle? And I do know you haven't said this, but I would imagine that makes you cringe a little bit just as a representative of the chair to hear Martha say libertarians could vote for Donald Trump. I'm not putting you on the spot in the sense asking you to take a side, but how do you interpret what she said and how do you explain that if somebody approaches you at a party meeting and asks about that scenario?
Well, thank you for that, William. Well, I would cringe to hear libertarians say they're voting for Trump or Biden. It's like, I don't know, Applebee's and Arby's. It's not Ruth Chris, you know? They're both, I don't know.
That's a good one.
So anyways, but about the pragmatism. So I am also a pragmatist. So I'm an engineer by trade. I like to analyze things, think about, all right, here's an objective. What's A, B, and C to get to that? One thing I really liked about the candidates this year, in particular Lars Mapstead, was the way he outlined a concrete goal. That goal is stop 270. So just to give a little context about what that is. So he wants to stop either Trump or Biden from getting the necessary electoral votes they need to win on election night. So I think that is whether or not, you know, Lars can win the presidency. Like, I think stopping Trump or Biden from winning on election night, that's going to do amazing things for us. I think that's enough of a goal that we need everyone voting libertarian as much as we can get.
Martha, that's a phenomenal point because I believe you what you say. And I hate telling that these individuals are running for president, but deep down they know that. But Lars, I don't know how realistic Lars's goal is this cycle, but I truly believe that's a realistic goal. Trying to take one electoral vote, that would send massive shockwaves. Because if you can take one, down the road you can take more. And the Libertarian Party, I think, regardless, see, we're talking opinions about we're on the map now, we're in the news, yada, yada, yada. And please forgive me, I'm not downing that. But if you guys could win an electoral vote, it goes from conjecture, yeah, we're relevant, to fact. You are relevant. So what do you say to Tyler's point?
Do you think so? Do you think so? Because we've already won an electoral college vote. And did we become?
And when was that?
In 1972. And it was Tony Nathan with John Hospers. And so we already won one. 1972. We had the first openly gay man running for office with a woman before any other woman. She is the first woman in the United States history to have ever won an electoral college vote. This is our party history, and I bet you Tyler didn't know this beforehand. So I'm just going to say that there is already precedent for this. We've already won one, and you know what happened? Nothing. Zero. Donut. Not a damn thing.
Okay.
So yes, fantastic goal, and I love Lars. Lars is a dear friend. I would back him 100% for president. I would back pretty much everybody on that stage, as I said. I'm good friends with Chase. I think that Larry Sharp, who just joined Lars's team, is phenomenal. Honestly, I wish he was president and vice president. I think these men, honestly, I am honored that they chose to serve our party and serve our country. However, I'm just going to bring it back, guys, because you know what? It's just reality. This is our reality, and the reality is we've already won one, and nobody remembers. Nobody.
Right. But there's a reason for that, Martha. And before I go on, my producer said, cross promote that we broke Lars and Larry on the Stop 270 on Free For All live stream last week. Damn it. Okay, John, you got it. Y'all heard me. Now, some pushback, Martha. You are technically correct. But that's like saying we won an electoral vote when Jesus Christ was born. And here's why. We are in a completely different world. Yeah, we are in a completely different world where the technological revolution is here. Back in those days, the conglomerates controlled the media and the news. So stuff could get out, but it was by mail. But it was word of mouth. Now there's social media. Now there's the world is at your fingertips. And I think that is the critical difference. Some people may not have known if they won an electoral vote or the stories behind it, because they probably didn't write any stories back then about it, or minimal stories.
Oh, no, there's stories out there.
No. But not in contrast when you compare to the regular political stories of the day in terms of what was being covered and what was the emphasis. And that said, the libertarians, social media wise and the internet wise, it's like a whole different world. Everybody would know. So, for example, I always wondered, where are the conservative minority? Where are the conservative Latinos? I was alone on an island for decades. I knew there were minorities or Latinos, Puerto Ricans, not many Panamanians like me out there, but I knew they were out there. I just had no idea where and how to connect. And the internet completely changed that. So I do believe the internet is the game changer to make that relevance. But that said, I find myself always agreeing to be nice, but this is true. You're absolutely correct. Technically, you win the argument because it did happen, but I think it's a new argument today because of technology.
And in 2020, I was working on the Joe Jorgensen campaign. I can tell you, I was there. It was the day of the first debate, and we were in Ohio, and it was Facebook and Instagram removed all hashtags that had to do with Joe, and all of our social media was pulled down. So you know what? Again, I understand that things are different, but the mafia that is our government controls still everything. And so, yes, maybe one or two stories, and maybe there'll be a few TikTok influencers, and maybe Dave Smith will go on Joe Rogan and talk about it. But at the end of the day, the mainstream media, they're not going to cover us winning that one electoral college vote. And if they do, they're going to turn it into something else. They're going to change the narrative. This is what they do. And we just don't have the voice to really overpower that. So I wish to be wrong. Nothing would make me happier.
Martha, how do you change the narrative from simply the fact Libertarian Party won electoral vote? I mean, unless you simply lie and said that it didn't happen, I mean, that's the headline that every American is going to see.
The same way they lied to us about, for example, COVID. There's the same way that they lie about everything. Oh, no, it's so great that we're about to go to war in Ukraine. Let's go ahead because these people need
us. Martha, you're right. You're right. But here's the difference is there was I'm unvaccinated proud. And there was a whole swath of us on social media. It was the doctors they were censoring, the strong, big activists. But the word was out there. There was another side to challenge it. Before the internet, there was no other side. And you're right. The mainstream media will distort it, fake news, whatever you want to call it. But there's another side fighting it. And now a new media is growing stronger every day. So my take is simple. We can pack our bags, say that doesn't matter, or choose to strap up and fight. And I'm closer to death than life, but I'm still choosing to fight. And I'm a conservative in the Republican Party, but here I am hosting a libertarian debate because I think we need a strong, vibrant third party so the people can have something to choose. So those Republicans go, oh, my God, we're losing people. That's because you're bleep holes and they're going to the Libertarian Party. You know, I call myself a conservatarian, and I'm not going to change, but there are potentially millions that the Libertarian Party can rake in. And if they win an electoral vote, that's more than a possibility. So, again, I don't want to digress on this point here. Also, thank you for my producer, Big John. There's also – and this has been the case recently in recent elections. There's a chance it could be a 269-269 tie. Mm-hmm. And that one vote. Then what's that saying? The shot heard around the world. Was it Revolutionary War, I guess? You know, that would be the electoral vote heard around the world. And Lars Mapstead would transcend to the top of the libertarian hierarchy there, and well deserved so. So as a conservative, I don't want to see that happen. I want to see Trump win it. But I'm also my take is, let the chips fall where they may, Republican Party. You've been screwing your constituents for generations. I am a grassroots type conservative, and we've had enough. The problem is the libertarian message isn't reaching us. And I'm going to digress here for one moment because this is important to me. Everybody says, William, you're just a libertarian and you just don't know it. And I go, yes, on the surface, but I don't believe in open borders. I don't believe in
a lot of libertarians unfortunately.
No, hold on. I don't believe in no taxes. I don't believe in legalizing all drugs because I don't believe the world is black and white. So, for example, on hemp, I'd love to have a conversation with you, Martha. When I was a 12-year-old kid, I had my first joint years and years of Panama before I had my first beer. I understand cannabis, the pros and cons about it. I've studied it. I do believe it should be a legal drug, no different than going at home. You want a drink, you take an edible. You know, but at the end of the day, we've also seen San Francisco and other places, you know, drug addicts do have the potential to create harm to society. So I'm not here to argue that point. The point I'm making is that life is just not black and white all the time. And I think as a conservative, when I explored the Libertarian Party, that's what I saw. Everything was black and white. I was just on a podcast a couple of weeks ago with Jacob Hornberger. And I realized he looks at the
fantastic
world
human.
Black and white. You know, I don't agree with him a lot. But there, I have nothing but the utmost respect. Anybody who gives their life to the cause like he does deserves his respect. And I'm going to say here again, I said before, that Georgia debate was an embarrassment. Those men were treated wrongly the way they were mocked on that stage. And that angered me. I'm not even libertarian. But to the point is that's how when I encounter libertarians, I was like, man, you're just too black and white for me. You know, what do you say to a conservative like me who goes, look, the world's not black and white, but that's how you're presenting it to me. And I know through my own life that it's not black and white. So, Tyler, you go first and then we'll hear from Martha. Martha's chomping at the bit, though.
I'm ready to go. Let's go, Tyler. I got this one.
All righty. I'll give it a shot first. So there's an analogy I've heard from multiple people multiple different times. Think of libertarianism as a train, and there's different stops on this train. Maybe, you know, the first stop is the left portion of the classical liberal caucus. And then as we continue towards, you know, Ancapistan, you know, you're getting more towards like a minarchy. And then you finally have the anarchists. Now, we're all in this party together, right? And you can talk, you've talked to different presidential candidates. It can range from the most diehard, you know, black and white, like we're going to have Ancapistan person to a very, you know, let's say more, you know, reformist message like, oh, let's, you know, change this. Let's stop this war. So, I mean, I don't think you have conservatives say, you know, I don't see the world like this. Well, great. But do you want the world to go in this direction from where it is right now? Do you see that as an improvement? Maybe you don't agree with the most radical person in the party, but is that direction better from where we are now? And I think most conservatives, you know, who say I'm a libertarian at heart, and most libertarians, we're going to say, yes, this is a better direction than where we are now with the forever wars and the trillions in debt. How much it is? It's $1 trillion a year to service the debt now. So any direction towards more liberty and freedom and not burdening our grandchildren with forever debt, I think is a great step. So
Martha?
I agree wholeheartedly with Tyler. We're heading in that direction towards freedom. Do you want to get on the freedom train or do you just want to go 50 miles an hour or 100 miles an hour towards that insolvency at dead end? So, but I do think that you're seeing things as black or white, like libertarians are all or nothing. And that's just not it. And I'm sorry that you weren't sold the libertarian dream. But what you pointed out with the drugs, for example, you immediately went to San Francisco or Oregon or all these places, Portland, where, you know, yeah, it's a disaster. But what did they do? They made it legal, which means you can have possession of it, but they didn't make it legal. You can't walk into a CVS pharmacy and go buy your heroin or your whatever. What did they do? They created these areas where you can get drugs because now the government's handing out drugs or paraphernalia or whatever, making it fine for them to do it on sidewalks so they're not upholding the laws that they already have on the books. So that is not legalization. Of course it's going to fail. And it is failing, and rightfully so. If you have people just doing drugs everywhere, that's a problem. It's almost like we already have laws against being publicly intoxicated. Why are they not applying it there? So the thing that you need to understand is what do those drug laws do? So for the last 100 years, we've had cannabis illegal. And now the United States government just agreed that it's medicine. So they've been able to tell you, you can't have access to a plant, you can't grow it. And furthermore, we are going to take every one of your possessions because it's a RICO charge. They can take your home, they can take your savings, they can take everything. And they can take your productivity and throw you in a cage. So what you're saying with these drug laws is not, oh, well, drugs can harm society and drugs. No, drugs do not harm society and people the way the government does when they take your life from you and all your worldly possessions. Do you know how many families have been destroyed in this country and how many people you and I have to pay taxes to support so that they can get three meals a day, so that they can get clothes, so that they can have shelter while we have to go to work? These policies have been horrible for everyone. And I don't know anybody who's like, you know what? I want to go to work harder so that that drug addict gets a roof over his head in jail. I just don't know anybody who's like, that's a cool idea.
I understand that. I'm going to take the final point here. At the end of the day, regardless of who implements what, if you have a crack addict and he breaks into your home and kills a family member, I don't think the family member is going to care about what policies, how it's done, et cetera. And my point being is it doesn't matter what policy, you're still going to have those people. And that's my whole point. It's not black and white. So what's the solution? I'm not saying you stop it, but I do agree. Certain
isn't
drugs,
breaking into a home already a crime? Wouldn't they already be arrested for doing such a
thing? But it's a product of the drug. Maybe if he had
only people that go
drug.
Into homes, only it's, people that go, break into get, homes are drug
that's
addicts.
My point. No, stop. You're twisting it. You're twisting it because I'm talking.
I'm asking you.
I don't care about the other people. Right now we are talking about a meth head drug addict breaking into your home because he's hooked on drugs, is looking for something to sell. It doesn't matter how it was implemented. That person still has a dead family member. And my point to you is it doesn't matter what laws, how best they are. That is still going to happen. So my take is everything is individual. So maybe it's different for this grade, whatever they do on the law, or maybe it's different for this. But I agree with you. We need to look at it. Certain things need to be done. But I think looking at it as in black and white, and I'm not the only one. I've seen this on film. Yeah, we should make all drugs legal. Yeah, a five-year-old should have the right to be able to drive.
Wait, no. That's not that. You can't mix things. A five-year-old is not an adult. We're talking about adults. No libertarian
is standing
here saying. No, I'm
talking about the libertarian mentality.
Libertarians do not believe that children can go out and buy drugs or sex or anything of that sort. We believe in adults being able to do adult things. And adults have the right to decide what they put into their body. Nobody owns my body. You can't say that somebody else owns my body and then tell me that I can't put something into it that I've made a choice for as an adult.
Right, until it impacts your life. And that's what I'm talking
about. But
that's
my point.
Example with the breaking and entering. That impacts
what percentage
your life.
Of people
I don't
who
care
break
about
in
the breaking
are...
and entering. I don't care about who's breaking and entering. I care why. Why did it? That, you never hear. You always, the question
because they're poor is
why.
The number one reason
why?
People break into homes.
No.
Poverty is the number one reason that people break into homes. Well, but poverty then should be what we look at. I mean, come on. This is so,
no,
like,
no, no.
Oh, well, that thing is
poverty.
Really bad.
Have
a gun and then you can save yourself
we
from somebody breaking into your
fed,
home.
We are the most fed nation in the world with surpluses of food everywhere. Yet people will break in because they'd rather break into a home than go deal with somebody.
Why are the cartels, boosting their operations in like the inland counties in Southern California, San Bernardino, Riverside? Why is it the cartels are the ones who are running these massive like cannabis operations, this like gray market?
Oh, I can tell you that exactly. I mean, having served here, like Martha, I've been elected too. You know, it's so overtaxed, the cannabis market.
So was that because the drug was made legal or because the government bungled the implementation?
The government bungled it. But remember,
the government bungled it, right?
That's right.
That's why the cartels are scaring the living daylights out of rural people in small little communities. Inland empire, and that's why a cartel is growing an influence in those parts of Southern California.
Right, but what you're missing the point is I've never seen any government institution over the long term remain noble. History has shown us everybody becomes corrupt the longer they're in government. And libertarians
then why support
not,
it?
And the libertarians,
why support it? Republicans have been in power for 189 years.
I don't.
Republicans and Democrats.
No, we have not.
Republicans and Democrats.
That's right.
Together,
be right about
189 years.
Be right about it. The greatest influence to our government of growing from a smaller government started with FDR, who blew up the government. Taxes were at 70-some-odd percent before Reagan took office. So Republicans used to go in there and try to rein that in. However, after George Bush the first, the rhinos took complete control of this party. And now I do believe, as you all talk about, it's a duopoly since Herbert Walker Bush. Prior to that, Republicans would come in and try to clean up. I mean, it was Eisenhower, a Republican, who warned us about the military-industrial complex. It's probably his greatest act as president, was trying to warn us. It was Reagan who tried to bring everything back in and get this country back. And you got to look at the actual decades of presidencies of Republicans versus Democrats. I do believe whoever that old man was who said it, you know, once the people figure out you can vote somebody in and get things for free, that's kind of like a turning point. And I'm afraid we are there now. But we can go all around on this debate. I want to ask you guys something about the issue specifically with Trump. Incongruences with libertarian principles and disregard for civil liberties. So many libertarians feel that Trump's policies and actions when he was president did not align with the core principles of libertarianism, such as limited government, free markets, and non-aggression. The non-aggression, he did not get us into any wars, but he blew up this debt. Now, as far as civil liberties, they've also been critical of Trump's stance on issues like immigration, surveillance, and free speech. Let's take the first set here. What's your take in terms of the incongruence with libertarian principles regarding overall limited government, free markets, and non-aggression? What's your take on that, Martha, regarding Trump versus the libertarian principles?
I think that, you know, his first term was absolutely atrocious. And I think that libertarians were right to say that Trump did not actually bring more freedom to the country. On the contrary, he introduced bump stocks. On the contrary, he also, he was shut down the country for COVID. He was the one that hired Fauci. I mean, I can go down the list of all the things that Trump did wrong. However, with that said, again, I'm going to point back to libertarians, 0% chance we're going to get into the White House, A. And then B, you also have the fact that from the time Trump left office to now, some stuff has happened, including he has been the target of the DOJ and he has been gone after multiple times by these institutions. And you know, I come from Latin America. I grew up in Venezuela. And I can tell you that one of the things that Hispanics see that is just in comparison is how they put our elected officials or our people running for office into jail in third world countries, like in Nicaragua, where last year they put 7 people running for president into jail. So I think that there's a difference with him this time around. Again, I am not on the Trump team. I am not a Trumpster, but I think that if he comes in and makes some assurances and also adds libertarians to his cabinet, which is something that we can demand. And I hope to be one of the voices pushing for this. If Trump wins, and because libertarians help, I hope that he puts some people that are libertarians that can push these freedom policies in. So, and one of the things that everybody knows that I am in favor of is to free Ross. So if he makes a certain amount of promises, and remember his cabinet, if you believe the stories, and I think it was said under oath, so I'm pretty sure it's true, Trump was okay with assassinating Julian Assange. So that's a big problem for us libertarians. So this is very much a deal with the devil if we're going to go forward with it. I am, it's disgusting, but it is what it is. This is politics, and we're not going to go against the duopoly alone. I don't think we've been trying to break the duopoly for 50 years, and we're not exactly close to doing that. So this is one of those hold your noses and vote type of situations, but it doesn't feel good. It feels kind of icky and I need a shower.
And Tyler, before you go, this is, I think, the best opportunity libertarians have had to not break up the duopoly, but to snag lost members. Tyler, your take on the question in regards to incongruences with the Libertarian Party on limited government, free markets, and non-aggression.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think as Martha pointed out, he ran the debt up. What is it? How many trillions, you know, in lockdowns during COVID? Not only did he hire Fauci, he kept Fauci on, you know, longer and longer and longer. And then don't forget about the, take the guns first, due process later.
Yeah.
For anyone who thinks that Trump is a 2A savior, the orange man said, take the guns first, due process second. So I think that kind of ruins that little take. Go ahead, William.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah. So about Trump getting people into the Libertarian Party, you know, if that happens, that's great, right? Trump is coming to the convention. Short of something crazy happening, Trump is going to be the convention. Am I happy about that? Not necessarily. I'm not necessarily happy that Trump is going to be there. But it's happening, right? And as a pragmatist, regardless of what is going on, you need to take the hit and say, all right, how can we make the best of the situation? I would love it if we walked away from this with more people signed up for the Libertarian Party. You know, if we had spotlight on our candidates. You know, I think perhaps we disagree on this. My biggest concern, Martha, is that libertarians, we think that we're going to get all this media coverage. No, we're not. Trump's going to get media coverage. And Trump's going to get his little soundbite that says, libertarians applauding because he said free Ross. And then he's going to show that in all his campaign clips and say, look, all right, I'm going to get this 1% in these swing states. Because that's why he's there. I think it is wishful thinking that we're going to engage in an honest debate with Trump and ask him these questions and him have any chance of responding in an honest way.
And actually, he just won't win our votes.
Right.
It's pretty simple.
I think Tyler's right, but Martha's right, but she didn't say it from this perspective, but I see what she's saying overall. I'm a marketer. The fact that he's speaking there, it's that opens up 10 zillion marketing angles, and what I do with it is what will affect the growth of the party. Because Tyler, you're right. That's what's going to happen. But it's what libertarians do with it afterwards. Everybody's going to forget the actual speech, but they're never going to forget Trump spoke at the Libertarian. And I'm not saying you do revisionist history, but you can use that point in many ways in your recruiting process. So I am indifferent as a conservative. If I was a purist, I would say, hell no, he shouldn't speak, because we've got 9 candidates of quality. And there is legitimate argument for that, you know, but there's also a bigger picture. What I will say is I agree with both of you on the incongruence with libertarian policies. However, I've always looked at Trump as a pragmatic / opportunist. He was a Democrat before he came down that escalator. So all these things to me, that's just Democrat / opportunist. I love your idea, Martha, because that is actually doable. You can get him the promise to make at least one cabinet member a libertarian. You know, that is doable, because let's put it this way. The problem with what politicians don't understand, grassroots, the young, those who've never served, I'm going to go change the world. No, you're not. You're one person. That whole world is made up of the players. So Trump did not have enough people to go to, you know, and even then he's arrogant enough. But what I took out of the Trump regime or Trump administration was we had the highest working class wages ever in my lifetime, meaning people working at McDonald's, Home Depot, their wages were actually going up. We had the lowest unemployment rate for all Americans. As a minority, I have mixed feelings about First Step, but he did more than just talk about it like previous administrations. He kept the promise. He moved the capital of Jerusalem, our embassy to Jerusalem. You know, so he did, once regulations were taken off the board, which is what he did, our economy. So it truly is a mixed bag with Trump. I'm under Ronald Reagan's trust but verify, or we agree 80% of the time, and I think that's compromise. And that's how I try to look at Trump, because I'll be honest, and I rarely say this in conservative circles, because there's a lot of sheep in both parties, and you just can't say the truth without just like, oh, dear God, why'd he even come? You know? I'm not a big Trump fan. I know who he is as a human being. But Trump is no different than other elitist human being. And at the end of the day, his results have impacted not just all Americans, but my brethren Latinos, you know, the people who are struggling the most. So I understand exactly what both of you guys are saying. And you are right. I wouldn't get depressed, but I was like, oh, dear God. As the national debt kept going up, 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 up. And he didn't care. You know, he didn't care. And Trump is selfish, and he doesn't think at times. So he needs a stronger team around him, and he needs to humble himself a little bit. And I don't know if that will happen. But all that said, he's who I am voting for because I think he's the best chance to stop this bleeding. And we're talking tourniquet at this point. Moving on to the disregard for the civil liberties. Libertarians have been critical of Trump's stance on issues like immigration, surveillance, and free speech, which they see as infringing on civil liberties. I will say this. I'm in complete agreement with whatever y'all going to talk about on this one. Martha, you go first.
Well, it's just that. I mean, both sides of the government. I often call the duopoly a monarchy, honestly. The difference between us and England is in England, they're truthful about it. They're like, this is... We control it and we're a monarchy and tough luck if you don't like it. In the United States, they give us this illusion of choice. But as a long-term libertarian, I can tell you that is an illusion of choice. It's not the reality. We can't get a candidate on the ballot in all 50 states. We've done it 3 times now. And 2 of those times was under the leadership of Nicholas Sarwark, who we talked about earlier. So we've done the work. We've been able to push through those boundaries that are put on us. During Gary Johnson's campaign, I can tell you that Gary Johnson was polling at 12%, above the 10% he needed to get into the debates. And what did they do? They changed the rules so that you have to now qualify with 15%. And they didn't even ask people about Gary Johnson. They'd call people, they'd poll them, who are you voting for, Trump or Hillary? And people would be like, neither. Gary Johnson, like, so you're undecided. Great. And hang up the phone. We have been battling this for such a long time. We do not have a representative democracy. We do not have the ability to choose somebody other than the 2 geriatric candidates that the duopoly has put up for us. So honestly, you know what? This is great. I want more Americans to see 2020 part the, you know, and see that this is just, it's a spectacle. This is a circus. And so go ahead. If we're going to go for the circus, I want the candidate that is the, you know, entertainment one, which was Trump. And you know what? On top of that, people believe that he's about freedom. So, hey, if we're going to push freedom and if we can promote free Ross, free Roger Ver, we can promote, you know, less wars, more independence, less taxes. I'm saying let's go because at least that train is heading in the right direction. Again, I wish it wasn't so. My biggest wish is that the libertarians got to get on that debate stage and give our great ideas because we have some fantastic ideas on how to solve the crisis in this country. We have some fantastic people delivering messages, not only on that stage, but we have people like Spike Cohen and we have Dave Smith who get on podcasts and who talk about the libertarian message and will sell it so well that, you know what, I think when more people give us an opportunity, they're going to be coming to our party because, yes, we smoke weed, but we're also cool with we were cool with having gay people run for office in 1972, long before it was cool, and women. And we've been inclusive of everybody because we don't believe that it's the color of your skin or where you come from or your gender or any of that that makes you you. We believe in the individual. And I believe that that message sells. So, again, we're just going back to Trump doing this. You know what? Sometimes you just got to do the icky thing to get to the better point. And my goal is so that 2028, people are like, why aren't those libertarians on that debate stage? Why aren't those libertarians on every state ballot? Because that's where we need to be. We need to give America a real choice. Right now, we're giving America some wishy-washy, oh, do you want a turd sandwich or do you want a douche canoe? Like, it's just, they're both bad. So let's work towards more freedom in our lifetime.
Tyler, before we go to you, regarding the debates, I put on debates, and it is hard to determine the cutoff when there's more than a few candidates. However, I was livid when they did that to Gary Johnson because, look, I come from Panama. You know, I saw 2 dictators. I saw authoritarianism. You know, so I'm like, and I'm not going to lie. You get a libertarian or any third-party candidate, and that is an uplift to name recognition of the party that has never been seen in the history of our country. It's just something they do not want. So that's, I'm in full agreement. That's why they did it. And to add another, knock on my own party, when I put on the congressional debate and, I was recruiting people from both sides to be on the committee. Out of my side, it was stunning because, you know, you think of your friends as honorable and all that. All right, William, we got to make these questions to make the Democrat look bad. How are we going to make? And my whole point, the reason I was able to get 2 candidates who hated each other on that same stage was because when they asked me, what's in this for you? I told him I was born and raised in a third world country. I want to see a fair election. It's my job to ask you the question in a fair, unbiased way, you to answer and the community decides. And that is such an alien concept in politics. Yet most people assume that's how it is. It's an honest setup. So Martha, I'm in complete agreement. Tyler, I apologize. Second time I did that to you. But in regards to civil liberties like immigration, surveillance, and free speech, though, let me put a little different twist. Can you reconcile some of that and go, okay, I can accept Trump coming? Or for you, are these too much, or are you just still going to let it play out? You're just not sure where you stand on this? And that's okay. The reason I ask people is Tyler's an up-and-comer. This is probably your first time you've experienced this, and for a lot of us it is. And there's no pressure on Martha and I. I assume there's probably a lot of pressure on you because you're the chair. The table is yours. I hope I didn't screw you.
Thank you, William. So, I was, elected as chair this year. Thank you to everyone who voted for me. So my personal feelings about this, I am not in favor of Trump coming. It doesn't have to do with my personal feelings towards the Orange Man, simply because I don't think the media is going to give honest coverage of this. And yes, the Libertarian Party is going to get news coverage from this. But are our candidates going to get news coverage from this? Is Lars going to get news coverage? Is Chase going to get news coverage? I'm not so confident. And I'm not so confident that Trump is going to come into this open to answering any questions in an honest way. Now, people like to make the analogy of this to RFK coming to the California State Convention. And I do see that analogy. But I think there's a little bit of a difference there. I was there in person. I saw RFK speak. And I think he was much more amenable to an honest, and he actually, they had them there on a panel with Libertarian presidential candidates. It was moderated and RFK was right there. He was being asked questions. He's obviously a politician. He's going to, answer in his politician way. But he did it with a lot more honesty and integrity than I could ever see Trump doing. Trump is there to make a stump speech. End of game. I think that is the key difference, and that's why I do not support Trump coming.
Okay, Martha, I just have to ask you to respond. Put on your gloves, people. No, I'm kidding. So obviously you disagree with Tyler. What would you say to somebody, a constituent, looking for you for advice who kind of repeats his tale?
Well, no, he has very valid concerns. I mean, that's what the media does. They ignore us. And it's such a shame that we haven't decided yet who our candidate is. It'll happen at the end of this week, of the weekend of the convention. So we are at a disadvantage. Our rules kind of put us there, because it would be swell that we have already chosen a candidate, and then that candidate can be the one to push back on Trump immediately after, while the cameras are still there, while it's happening. So you know what? Our own rules are kind of screwing us on this one. So I will give it to you, Tyler. There's a very strong possibility that it's going to be wishy-washy, and they're going to say the Libertarians don't have their stuff together because they don't have a candidate yet. And, you know, I wish that we would change things. I think Trump is coming on Saturday, so it would be fantastic if we could all agree, and if our party could stop fighting over whether Trump's coming or not and change the rules so that our candidates have Friday or the vote. That would actually make this better. So instead of fighting amongst each other, I'd love to see us come together and fix this cluster F that is about to happen. So, I mean, I can't say anything different. I've been very vocal and said, you know what, if we can take the lead on this, we should have the backdrop behind Trump saying something very libertarian, like all your freedoms all the time. I don't know. Whatever slogan we want to put up there, make it very gold so that his orange kind of washes into the gold. We should definitely have signs with what we believe in holding it up. And when he says some stuff that we're like, no, we should definitely be booing it. He was given a list, according to what I've heard, of 10 things we want. I hope to hear in that speech those 10 things. And I'm going to do this, and I'm going to free Ross, and I'm going to end the war on drugs. What a lot of people don't realize is that Trump actually legalized marijuana on the national level with the 2018 Farm Bill. Granted, at a 0.4% or 3% THC level. However, it's still legal across the United States. He's done some good things. And again, I'm not, this is like me holding my nose and saying, he's done some things, but he has. And so we can work towards that freedom. Every Democrat has that ran for office, like, I'm going to make marijuana legal. And they've never done it. They've done, you know, Joe Biden just said, I'm going to free everybody who's in jail for possession. He freed zero people. So every Democrat's been like, I'm going to do this. And then they do the opposite. Trump actually did the thing. So let's give him a little bit of credit. And if he walks in and he says, I'm going to do these 10 things that you guys want to hear. Oh, and by the way, Justin Amash or Thomas Massey or somebody that you guys really like is going to be in my cabinet, or Spike Cohen, or, you know, whoever he chooses. Honestly, libertarians, I think there's so many great ones that it could be anybody. But we get a seat. Okay. We get some concessions. It's a win for us. So that's where I'm at with that.
So for our conservative audience, it doesn't matter who, Ted or Martha, who wants to take it. Who is Ross? You keep saying free Ross. Free Ross. Educate the conservatives here. Who wants to take it?
Thank you for this question. Okay. So Ross Ulbricht is the creator of a website called The Silk Road. Now, it was a dark web website where people could transact in Bitcoin only. And because Ross was a libertarian, he had these very strict rules. So no child pornography, no stolen goods, nothing that can... nothing that can hurt somebody else. So drugs were being sold on it. What people don't know is marijuana was the number one drug sold on it. And number two was insulin. Insulin was being sold on it. So he did this thing where, listen, you don't have to agree with this. I believe that he did the right thing, but a lot of people don't agree with me on this, and that's okay. What we need to understand is in 6 months on Snapchat, more drugs are sold in 6 months on Snapchat than on the entire history of the Silk Road website. And yet, everybody that's sold on Facebook, it's sold on Instagram, it's sold on X, it's sold on YouTube. Drugs and children are being sold on all of these platforms. And we know it. We have evidence. And yet Mark Zuckerberg is walking around and Elon Musk is walking around and everybody else. So there's a huge disparity. And the reason that I believe that Ross is in jail is because he dared to give Bitcoin its first use case. And how do I know that the United States government went after Ross? Because they had some real shady stuff going on. The judge did not allow Ross to defend himself properly. And the judge, when she was sentencing him to 240 years behind bars, Ross will never make it out of jail. She said that his libertarian beliefs needed to be punished, that he, because of these beliefs, because he believed in a truly free market, he needed to be punished. And the Supreme Court refused to hear this case. So Ross's only way of getting out of jail is a presidential pardon. This young man is an example of a stand-up human being. His family is great people. I'm grateful to know them. And they are great human beings who believed in a cause. He believed in a cause. He was a young 26-year-old guy who did something that I think, you know, as a 26-year-old is amazing. And yet here he is. He's serving this charge. And now, again, we see Roger Ver, who is a very prominent Bitcoiner, also being arrested. And so I think that makes my case very strong. They are coming after the Bitcoin community. They went after the Bitcoin 6 as well. They've gotten long jail sentences as well. So you know what? The United States government is going against the Bitcoin part of this. And as people are buying Bitcoin, it's becoming more mainstream. It's getting out of their hands. It's time for the United States government to stop being at war with Bitcoin and to release Ross Ulbricht. He deserves to be free. He's already been there for 11 years for building a website, because there's all these people that have all these conspiracy theories and rumors the government put out that he tried to order hits. They were not able to prove it, and it was dismissed with prejudice, meaning they can't bring it back. Ross Ulbricht does not deserve to be in jail. So long story short, that's who Ross Ulbricht is, creator of the Silk Road.
I remember him, man. It was like the 90s or 2000s, and the story came and went, and you all libertarians are the only ones who talk about it, and it's not good or bad. It's just sad reality. When Julian Assange came along, he kind of soaked up all the air in terms of the journalists. There's the other one. I'm not too keen on the
Edward
other one.
Snowden.
I'm not keen on Snowden because I want to see what he – well, I'll tell you why. I served. My father served. All my sisters served. So if he let loose any information that got our troops killed, hammer him to the wall. Julian Assange.
But they didn't. They haven't been able to confirm that ever. Well, there's no damage. And what did he show, though?
That's not what they said, but at that point, I saw it was a railroad.
They've never been able to. They could bring those charges forward. But also, what did he expose of the United States government? He exposed
tremendous.
Of course it matters. It matters that our government was spying on us. He exposed that. The only reason we know that the United States government monitors every single one of our communications is because of Edward Snowden. I'm going to push back on this. I too agree with you. I don't want to see anybody killed. Huh?
But again, if it's your child whacked, killed, you're not going to have that same stance. And that's my issue with society. You know, Julian Assange passed information on no different than sources giving it to the New York Times. And I'm not saying I don't think Edward Snowden should be in prison. I'm saying a full-fledged investigation, not done by the pro-government, done by professionals, should be done. Because I just want the truth, you know.
And he gave us the truth. He was a source. He gave us the truth. And the truth is the United States government is spying on every one of its citizens. That is a violation of the Constitution. You have a right to privacy, and you need a warrant for somebody to come in and check your stuff. And they're doing it remotely. Right. They're recording all of our information, and they're using it against American citizens. And I think that that was a patriotic thing that he did. And I don't believe it. You know, the government coming out and saying that he was an evil person that possibly killed people. Show me the money. Show me the proof. Where is it?
And that's what I'm asking for. The government.
It's not
approved.
Available.
I'm like, yeah, of course. And that's because of how the government works. But we don't know. That's the actual honest answer.
So you're saying that the guy that brought you the information to tell you the thing that you don't know.
No, he didn't bring me that information. We knew judges and FISA were rubber stumping FISA requests.
If everyone knew about it, then why did Snowden have to go to Russia?
Well, because Snowden was a one-person type event they could grasp on and make an example, just like the Silk Road. The government works in making examples.
You sound like someone who's proposing that the king, you know, tie and quarter like the dissident. We're going to, you know, take them to the town square and pull them into four pieces.
I would tell the king to do that. I would tell the king to do that if he took my brother. I would tell the king to do that if my brother's death was a result of what that guy did.
Your brother's death is the result of what the United States government is doing, because he exposed that the United States government was targeting American citizens. He showed that American citizens were murdered by our government. So yes, you know what? Our brothers are being murdered, and he exposed that. And instead, we're like, oh, well, if he killed somebody on the other side, but they're all our side. What difference does it make? The United States government is murdering our own and sending people to war to protect some oil fields or some poppy fields or whatever it is. And he exposed this. So did Julian Assange. And honestly, Julian Assange is an Australian citizen, and he is being charged with crimes in the United States where he's never stepped foot. These are ridiculous. They have to make these charges, and they have to pretend like somehow we're all idiots and we can't get this information somehow, because they sell you this story. Oh, he murdered some people, died because of him. Show me the money. Show me the proof. I'd love to see.
I'm like, show me the proof. He didn't. You can't. And that's my whole point. I want some kind of outside investigation.
Innocent until proven guilty in this country, as last time I checked.
That's right. That's right.
And show me the proof that he killed somebody.
No, he is. So he should be out on bail or whatever. I agree.
He's fled because he's not going to be given a sentence.
I don't agree.
Because look at Ross Ulbricht happened.
You're missing my point, Martha.
Have a country where we can actually do this and be free and go against our government. That's why he has to be in Russia.
Martha, I knew the government was bad when old Special Forces family members were telling me about their in-road trips into Cambodia and then having to deal with Agent Orange. So maybe consider me jaded, but to me it's like we already knew this, and the media chooses to cover this when they can make money headlines, but then when it dies down, they refuse to keep following up, and that's what's
Agent
lacking.
Orange,
we're betrayed by our
Tuskegee.
Own.
Well, they've done it, human experiments.
Yeah, I'm
and
well
why
aware
are you
of
defending them?
I'm not defending them. I'm just not defending or supporting your side of taking one side without proof. I want proof. You show me.
So do I.
Where
Let's go to a
kill.
Case open. Let everybody see it. Why was Ross Ulbricht? They denied cameras in the courtroom. They denied cameras in the courtroom because they knew that they were not going
to
give Ross a fair trial. They denied those cameras.
You don't have to convince me there.
But that's what's going
to
happen.
We're not talking about Ross Ulbricht killing fellow military members.
But they could have. They claim that people died from consuming drugs. They used that same argument for Ross, and they said that he ordered kills, which they never were able to prove. And yet he is being convicted in the court of public opinion because the government put that out there. The point is, when you are the target of the government will come after you. And that is the point I'm trying to make to you.
And this is why you're wrong. So This is why you're wrong. So when I was in the military, I was a watch supervisor. This guy, and we had general quarters. Everything was going down. It was war games. This guy came up to me, and Tyler, I want your input after I speak here. You've been kind of too quiet over there. So he was under me. He said, Del Pilar, dude, I just took some Sudafed, and we're in general quarters. You got to be on top of it. And he's dozing off, and he's sitting on the radar. I said, I will relieve you as soon as I get everything set up, and I'm going to send you out to be a watch on the watch post, meaning he's outside the ship in the code, but I'm going, you're going to be awake. I forgot about him. They wrote him up. He was a dirtbag, ex-coke addict, had been restriction, lost his stripes, bad dude. But in this case, I was the one who screwed up. And they wanted me to look the other way. I went to captain's mast. The whole chain of command is on one side, ready to railroad this guy. It's a brand new captain, too. So he doesn't know who is Tom from Dick from Harry. He looks at me, doesn't even pronounce it. Petty Officer Dippler? It's like, what do you have to say after the whole chain of command has spoken? I said, sir, Petty Officer Belittle, I'm not going to say his real name. I go, yeah, he's not a good sailor, sir. Yes, he's had his issues, but in this case, I am at fault. And you know what saved that sailor's tail? It was a new captain. He had his whole chain of command that he had to trust, and he had a little peon petty officer there who was speaking the truth, but who, by all intents and purposes, he should throw under the bus to decide what the people were going to support him. Somebody in the chain of command got too arrogant. Sir, I've taken that Sudafed. It doesn't make me sleepy. The captain goes, I've taken it too, and it makes me sleepy. Gave the guy restricted sentence like 30 days, don't screw up. But my point is I'm not going to condemn somebody because they have a pattern. This case, every case is unto itself. So I would become the biggest Snowden supporter if an investigation was, yeah, William, there was never. That I'm there. Edward, I am on your side. But that said, I'm in complete disagreement with how the government handles the Albrights, the Rosses. And that's where our politicians fail us, because it should. I mean, they're doing it to Trump. Martha, I'm in agreement with you. You're Cubano. I'm Panamanian. We've seen our countries overrun by dictators. So I know why you're passionate. I'm the same way. But I also know this. Every story, every tale is unto itself, and that's how it should be judged. Because once you put outside forces and stuff that has happened before that may be related, but is also not related, meaning it's a different case, you run certain hazards to your own humanity and how you judge others. Tyler, what's your take on that? And Martha, there is no right or wrong here. That's your belief. It's my belief. That's what makes this country so great versus being in another country. We disagree and whack goes our head. You know, so Tyler, your take on all of this.
Thank you for that. I think free Snowden, he shouldn't be trapped in Russia for the rest of his life. And the idea that I don't think you can seriously tell any of us here, William, that you think Snowden would ever get a fair trial in the United States or in some sort of international court. In no world would that ever happen. I mean, you said it yourself, what Trump was considering assassinating Snowden. That's the place we're at. So there's no chance he's going to get a fair trial. Now, whether or not Snowden released valuable information that let Americans know about what the security state was doing to us, right? That's important. You raised another point. Did what Snowden released get someone killed? Okay, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But why are you applying that standard to Snowden when you don't apply that standard to the government? Think about all the things the government does every single day, killing American citizens, you know, the droning of American citizens on American soil. Where is that now? Oh, well, you know, Snowden couldn't do this. He might have gotten one person killed, which is a tragedy and horrible. But where is the application of this standard to our own government?
I agree. No, I agree. Look. A lot of people had no clue this happened. Everybody loves Oppenheimer, the movie, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't see it, but I've never seen this toad, except for maybe a documentary when I looked it up. When these atomic bombs were off, they had military guys at various lengths, miles, walking towards it or away from it to determine the radiation effects. I mean, it's like, and what did the government do? They ran out the clock till they all died. I think when I last read about this in the 80s or 90s, there was maybe a handful of people still alive. And the lawyers were saying, we still have literally rooms full of documents they send us where they need to.
My family was never compensated because my grandfather died from Agent Orange.
Yeah, there you go.
He was in the Air Force and he wasn't part of the original suit. Oh, well, we're going to, you know, keep delay. And then he passed away, right? And then my grandma was going to keep fighting it. But you know what? They don't want to pay out to the victims of their crimes. They don't want to pay out to the American citizens affected by their policies. Do they really care about the troops who died these horrible deaths?
Nope. With politicians, we are just pawns. And it irks me, but I see the necessity at it for certain types of immunity. But the droning really starts to – you got to remember, I was a patriot. I served my father. My father, Martha, you may not know this, and I haven't confirmed it, but I've been told my father was the first Latino to make E9. That's an enlisted rank in these United States of America. My father is 91 years old today. Just spoke to him yesterday. God bless him. He served. I served. All three of my sisters served. My half-brother was a commander. So – my transformation came right 6 months after Bush Jr. invaded Iraq. I'm like, yeah, baby, yeah, go kick some ass. And then 6 months later, I'm like, what the hell are we doing? I use stronger sailor words. And that's when I began questioning, because at the end of the day, I couldn't lie to myself anymore. So, Martha, you're correct in our debate there. That's how I feel. But I will not let go of my roots of every case has to be treated unto itself, because even if it's a bad guy, he or she may not be guilty in this instance. So that's how I live my life. And I'm not going to lie to you two. It has burned me more than once. Again, you know, I got that guy off. When I walked out of that command, the guy told me, your career's over, dude. You're screwed. And I was the top sailor in the department. I went from what is called 4.0 ratings. When I left, my final ratings were like 2.2, 2.4. They just hammered me because I went against the grain. Now, I was never going to go back in. I wasn't going to go to reserves, and I don't care. But now I do, because I ran for office once. So what if I run for office again? That's public. I'll talk about it, and I'll say why. You know, but at the end of the day, I hold to my belief system of making everybody equal.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Can I throw one in there? So you've said that the United States government is potentially lying to us. You earlier said,
oh no, that, they always lie.
Okay, so they're lying to us. And you earlier said that the United States has been compromised at least since Eisenhower, or you know, so why is it that we should be sending our sons, like you, and thank you for your service, to go serve in their wars? Because we haven't declared a war in this country since World War II. We are way outside of the Constitution. And your job as a soldier, as somebody who served, is to obey the Constitution, not the politicians who sent you there. And so, you know, I really, again, I am so grateful for people like you and like your family that are willing to put your life on the line for us and for what you believed is correct. I just, my job as a politician, as somebody who's run for office, as somebody who speaks out to people, is to make sure that when they send you and your children and my children, that we're doing it for the right reasons. And the only reason that is right and that is just is for the defense of this country, not to go defend somewhere else and not to go save somebody's oil field or their poppy field or whatever else, or to make money for Halliburton or for Raytheon or for anybody else. The only reason that it is okay to send our young men and our treasure to wars is because we are defending this great nation and the ideals in this great nation, not in some other country. So again, I have to push back because I don't get it. You were there. You know how this works out. You know very well that once 9/11 happened and we were like, let's go, we didn't even go to the place that we were supposed to go. Because 19 of the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. Where did we go? We went to Iraq and Afghanistan. And later on, 20 years later, the Pentagon was so kindly let us know that after all those billions of dollars, whoops, it looks like we didn't need to go to Afghanistan after all. So you know what? I think that we can agree on this one. And just my job is to make sure that people like you, William, are saved from going to this war, which is not our fight.
No, you're right, Martha. It's time before I get to you. You're right. When we went in Afghanistan, I still remember being in the kitchen and I was opening a drawer and I heard, and I just stopped. What the bleep are we doing in Afghanistan? Yeah, that was my first reaction. But Martha, right up, like I said, 6 months after that war, if you go to my timeline, you'll see me everywhere about people talking about serving. I'm like, don't read this. Get out. They are sending you to go die for a buck. My dad served 30 years, as I just said. I have to confirm this, but the first Latino to make E9 in 14 years. And I'm going to repeat that like a broken record. I'm so proud of it. But that said, when I talked to him about getting out, he said, get out. He said, get out. So you're right. And where I am wrong, I was super patriotic until 6 months after that war. But how I changed was my personal life growth. But I also look back and understand I've been wrong since day one because I do my research. And even in high school or junior high, when you're learning about these wars, I'd always raise my hand. If Congress is supposed to declare war, how can we send all these troops in? You know, because you're right. There's what, and it's what the government does. They bastardize the
magic.
The executive power.
They add a little magic sauce, and the Constitution goes poof, and we can just do it.
It goes from consultants going to advise a foreign nation's military to us sending troops and getting in the draft. Tyler, what's your take on what Martha and I have been talking about?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to thank you for your service. And in San Diego, the San Diego Libertarian Party, we have lots of veterans. And I think, you know, hearing their stories and when they've served in Afghanistan and hearing what happened to them, yeah, I take that to heart. But like Martha said, I think the core purpose of our armed forces should be to defend, you know, the United States and the citizens of the United States. Why are we, you know, defending poppy fields? Why are we defending oil fields? I don't get it. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I think you guys have covered that. It's not right. My like forte with particularly that part of the foreign policy. So
well let me say this, Tyler, to answer your questions. This is a big beef I have with libertarians. They look at war black and white. So for example, the Panama Canal, when it was built, it was being built for the world to be controlled by the U.S. So there's a reason we have troops. I don't agree in open war, but sometimes nations do help us, and every case is a case-by-case basis, because at the end of the day, that aircraft carrier also doubles as a city that immediately can go to any national or world catastrophe. I served. I went 200 miles.
Why didn't it go to Lahaina?
Well, it went to Indonesia when they had it some years back. It depends where they're at. No, it is, and I will answer. Donald Trump sent a supply ship, a Navy hospital. Those are massive. To New York City, parked it there, said, Governor, you got your hospital.
And what was that before or after 2 weeks to slow the spread? Remind me.
It doesn't matter. See, you're trying to convolute the point. The point is Trump did send it there. You know, at the end of the day, he did do that. You know, so for another example is I volunteered as a translator. I went 200 miles in. I didn't have to. The Shining Path was running all over Peru at the time. You know what we went in to treat? We're Indians. I will never forget this. It killed me. It broke my heart. This one family with a 5 or 6 year old girl had traveled about 200 miles to see the dentist, only to be told it was just too bad. So there are many good things the military does. That's why I always tell people life is not black and white. At its core, yeah, we're there to kill people, to kill other things. But it's not always black and white. And I do agree we should not enter any war without the approval of Congress. If we went back to that, all of this would end, and the military would be quasi-peaceful purposes with training with other nations. Look, we've been here a while. So I want to get to two more topics. Tyler, your overall take on the RFK saga with the Libertarian Party. The reason I ask this is I want to read you a quote. Let me find it in terms of what RFK said. We're not going to have any problems getting on the ballot ourselves, so we won't be running Libertarian. That angered me because I'm like, so at the end, you didn't care about the libertarians. You just wanted their access to the 50 ballots. So for regardless of whatever people say about him, at the end of the day, I think he may have slipped at the tongue and revealed, hey, I never cared for you in the first place. What's your take on that quote?
Well, I think that was a discussion among lots of people in the Libertarian Party. I think it was kind of, at least I felt like the people I talked to, We knew that RFK was there and considering the Libertarian Party because he wanted ballot access. Now you read that quote, right? He formed his own We the People Party, and he's saying they're going to try and get ballot access that way. For a time, you know, perhaps the RFK team had been thinking about the Libertarian platform. Now, I'll be the first to say RFK is not a Libertarian. He has many policies that are not Libertarian. You got some overlap with the COVID stuff, okay, sure. And the national security state, fine. But he's not a Libertarian. I will say, though, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, I think, you know, when RFK was on that debate stage in California, he engaged with us and our audience, I think, with a lot more honesty and integrity than I would ever expect from a Trump or a Biden. And to that, you know, I really appreciate. And let's be fair. RFK, I would rather have RFK than either Trump or Biden. I'll say that out front. You know, he's not a Libertarian, but at least he's going to
win, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And okay. And I apologize to both of you. My producer, stop yelling. I get passionate. I don't realize how loud my voice goes. So, Martha, that was mostly you and I. So I apologize if it seemed I was yelling. I was just getting
me too. I yelled too. So I also apologize. You know, look at what RFK did, which is the same thing that Trump is doing. He's showing Democrats that, hey, you can vote for me because I am so centrist that I can go into the Libertarian convention and talk to them in this way. And I'm hoping that Trump does the same thing. Obviously, he's not going to debate. He's just going to show up and do a speech. But I think that they're both showing that Libertarians, number one, we are in hot commodity this go around. We went from being ignored completely to being the it girl. And then on top of that, we're showing people that, hey, you don't like Biden. You don't like Trump. Look, everybody's coming to us. Everybody's coming to us because our vote matters and because we are people that are willing to listen to both sides of the aisle. We're willing to consider what's best for this country and not who our guy is. So I think that they're doing us a solid, to be honest. I think that they are definitely showing the American people that there's more options and that those options might not be as crazy as they thought. P.S. I've been to some Republican stuff and to CPAC, and I don't know where the Libertarian Party got that we're crazy. Y'all have some people. I don't know. It is a circus there, too, sometimes. So, I mean, I get it. We got the naked man up on stage or the semi-naked man and the man with the boot on his head. But the man with the boot on his head is actually a really fantastic human being with some great points that he makes. But, you know, I digress. We all have some crazy people. And I think that that's where the Libertarian Party shines. We allow you to be you. And we'll judge you based on you and not the group that you belong to. You know, we'll say we don't like naked men getting up on stage. It has nothing to do. We're not hating on all middle-aged, fat, white men with beard. We're just saying that one is terrible. And I think that that's the difference. You know, if that would have been any other party, they would have been like, oh, look at these white men. They have so much privilege that they're ripping off their clothes on the debate stage because they can. And we're saying, oh, maybe we need to change our policies. That's all.
You know, I remember that. That was before all this, you know, the woke and all that stuff started. But when I saw him, it's, you know, in all seriousness, what you said about Vermin is the guy who wears a hat, a boot on his head, people, and I'm sure you've seen pictures of, just look at Vermin. See, perception is reality. That's not true, but that's how everybody takes it. So every person that has mentioned Vermin to me, dude, he's a smart guy. He's just, I like him.
Amazing.
There's not one person, but yet my perception, look at that idiot there in that party, embarrassing them. So perception,
you know what,
does matter.
He was a candidate for the other parties because that's his stick. He's a comedian, and that's his thing, is to show how just crazy these parties are and how ridiculous they are. And so that was his point. And I think when he came to the Libertarian Party, everyone knew who he was. He definitely brought us some eyeballs, especially amongst the younger crowd. And so, you know, everybody here has their voice. Everybody here, we will give you your voice. We don't shut people up. We actually want to hear it. And we believe in the free market of ideas. So the same thing goes back to Trump. We believe in the free market of ideas. I'm not scared that Trump's going to get on that stage and libertarians all of a sudden are going to be like, 4 more years, let's go. Let's bring back Fauci. Let's shut down the country. Like, no, we're going to be like, Trump, that's unacceptable to us. And I hope that that's what the American people see, that when they record this and they see us booing, because that's probably what's going to happen because he's not going to say the things we want him to say. You know, people are going to see, whoa, some people that don't agree with Trump. And maybe that wins us over some people too.
I can't argue that. Guys, well, I have a final segment here. I want you to limit it to one sentence. This is half fun. As we all know, comic Dave Smith is one of the de facto leaders of the Mises Caucus and now the Libertarian Party. So he talked about Trump on his podcast called Part of the Problem, episode 1120. Now, his sidekick, I guess he's traveling with him on his comedy circuit right now. His sidekick, Robbie the Fire Bernstein, wrote down his list of demands for Trump. So take this tongue in cheek. We'll start with you, Tyler, and then we're going to go to Martha, then I ask the next question. But just one sentence, have fun. These are demands he would make to Trump. Agree or not, and give me a sentence. Question one, end support for the Gaza and Ukraine war. Tyler.
So can you restate? So that was your sentence, and so now you want me to make a sentence?
No. These are the demands from Robbie the Fire Bernstein from Dave Smith's Part of the Problem podcast. And I guess he's traveling with Dave Smith on the comedy circuit, so they did the show together. And it was about Trump speaking. So at the end of the podcast, he told Dave, hey, I wrote down some issues we should be asking Trump. So just, do you agree with it or not? If you don't agree, just one sentence why. This is more tongue-in-cheek fun, but I think it's some important questions too. So Tyler, do you a demand to Trump and support for the Gaza and Ukraine war.
And the wars.
Agree or not?
And the wars.
All right.
Agreement totally.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to add one thing, just one word. Realistic or not? Yes or no? Meaning in asking and getting that from him.
Is it realistic for him to end the wars, is what you're asking?
Yes. Yes. Yes or no?
Well, I mean, just stop sending the aid. Yeah, we're the one doing it. So, I mean, what Ukraine or Israel does, we can't control that, but we can sure stop sending them aid.
I agree. Okay, Martha, prosecute Fauci or at least a commitment to a special investigator on his financial crimes. Dave Smith said, no, not just financial crimes, but on everything. Martha.
An investigation? Ma'am. Absolutely. I think that we believe in due process. So an investigation first. And if they find something, then go after him. I mean, I think we all want me to be like, yes, go after Fauci. But that's not what we believe in. Due process.
Exactly.
He deserves and due process.
Investigate Fauci. I'd like to plug Rand Paul for this. You know, he's been the one spearheading that. Every time Fauci got in front of Congress, there was Rand saying, you know, Fauci, why did you support this lab in Wuhan, you know, doing things on gain of function? And Fauci would say, well, we've changed the definition of gain of function. Yeah. So technically, we didn't actually do gain of function research. But Rand was just on him, just, you know.
Rand has been the champion.
He's been the champion. And I really hope, you know, so, yeah, investigate him. But more so, Rand, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's make Rand the chief on that. Let's put him in charge of that. Absolutely.
I got to be honest. I saw it for the first time and I didn't think of it for sheer stupidity, but I'd be okay with Rand Paul as his VP, to be quite honest.
Me too.
You know? Okay. The third one. Now, Robbie was pretty smart here. He said, I believe, audit the Federal Reserve, not end the Fed, because he thinks he can get farther with Trump on audit the Federal Reserve, not end the Fed. Martha, you agree with that?
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and audit it. And I think it's realistic. Sure.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Tyler?
I'd take the Javier Milei approach and let's shut it down. I mean, maybe audit first, but at let's shut it down.
Ron Paul always says to audit it first, so I'm team Ron Paul on this one.
Yeah, because you can get that by the American people, but when you say end the Fed and the politics,
they think we're crazy.
Exactly. Perception versus reality.
Let's audit it and show the American public how disgusting it is, and then there'll be demands for ending the Fed. So yeah,
exactly.
I think one first and then the other.
Okay, Tyler, number four, a law against centrally backed digital currencies. I'm all for this. What's your take, Tyler?
Well, it's horrifying to even think that we would need to make a law against this. That's implying that it's really on the table in the first place, which is truly a horrifying consideration. If that's what it would take to stop or impede them from doing that, then yeah, let's put a law, no central bank digital currencies.
And Martha?
I think that it depends on which way we go. But if you're going to end CBDCs, then that leaves the avenue for the government to then say that all the other currencies are not allowed. So I'm actually going to go with the libertarian route and say, open up all currencies. Let the American people transact in whatever they wish, which could be the U.S. dollar, it could be in gold, it could be in Bitcoin, it could be in Monero, it could be in anything you want. If you want to trade in flowers, let's go. So that's my position on that. Let's go the libertarian route and not the authoritarian one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do miss the bartering. As small startups, they succeed the first year or two. I'm sure Martha probably went through some of this through just bartering, you know. So yes, I kind of like that answer, Martha. It was not what I was expecting. And it's a good twist. We just all agree on all these questions so far. Okay, Martha, a law against health passports or tracking systems. I'm a big yes. Let's get a law against that.
Absolutely.
But like Tyler said, why a law?
Get the government out of our healthcare, for God's sake. I don't know how many times that we have to say this. Everything where the government doesn't touch, it actually gets cheaper and better. Look at plastic surgery. Look at LASIK eye surgery. Both getting better with time and incredibly cheaper. I wanted LASIK like 10 years ago, and it was like $10,000 per eye, and now it's like $2,000 per eye.
That's
so
right.
Yeah, get the government out of it. Plastic surgery, everybody has plastic surgery now because it's so cheap and it's so easy, and it's so pretty good, I guess, if you're into that thing. So let's go ahead and get the government out of it. Everything the government touches turns to, it's the opposite of the Midas touch, out of there.
Tyler?
Yeah, I think, the way the government, the regulatory framework has been implemented, we've allowed hospitals to be such protected entities with these moats around them. You know, if you want to open up a new ambulance facility somewhere, you have to get the consent of your competitors. You know, there has to be a need in the community.
Yeah.
Let's chop away those regulations. Why does a business need the consent of its competitors to open up a shop? That just makes no sense.
Right. All these regulations and laws, all they do is keep creativity and strong entrepreneurs from entering the fray. And that's the whole purpose of it. Most people don't know, to the audience out there, that health got tied to work because of World War II or World War I. I'm going to say World War II. There weren't enough jobs, so they started offering healthcare. And it just kind of never left the industry. And I never understood that until I actually looked it up. I'm like, why is healthcare the only one that's tied to our job? You know, and I agree with Martha. Healthcare will be the same thing like auto insurance. You go to, even though that's a racket, because they've allowed them, the government to regulate it to the favoritism of the conglomerates. But overall, that gets us lower costs. You know, I'll never forget Rush Limbaugh was in the hospital, $30,000 on paper through healthcare type surgery. He paid like $3,000 cash when he said, I don't have healthcare. What is in cash? And that alone says it all. Okay, I'm not going to ask about the WHO because we're going to agree that, yes, we as a country should not be participating in the WHO with the virus response. Is there any disagreement with that?
No.
So here's the question, and I don't know where you stand, but I do know this is a big issue with libertarians, and that's open borders. Robbie the Fire Bernstein said, build the wall. Martha, your take on that one.
Oh, we should probably let Tyler go first here. But, libertarians, we believe in the free market of ideas up until it's the free market of ideas with immigration. So this country did not have an illegal immigration at all. We had open borders for the first 100-plus years of this nation. As a matter of fact, our founding fathers put in naturalization into the Constitution, not immigration. And immigration, really, when we're talking immigration, the problem we have is with welfare. So there's, of course, going to be an incentive for people to come over to then claim said welfare. And why not? The moment you remove that, then you have people coming into this country only because they really absolutely have to, or they need this opportunity. We see this happening all over the world. They come to America and in America build businesses and are amazing. Elon Musk, people forget that he is South African. He came to this country to build SpaceX, to build Tesla. He also, there's also Sergey Brin for Google. I mean, we have so many entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs that are from other countries that come here. We do brain drain on the rest of the world. I want the best and the brightest to come to this country. So when you build that wall, people forget that in Germany, there was a wall to keep people in, to keep people into this place where they could not escape. My family's from Cuba. We don't need a wall because it's an island and they didn't let you escape. And that is what governments do. So be careful of the wall. And, you know, libertarians, we believe in freedom, and it should not matter. Your freedom shouldn't matter where your mother gave birth to you, where you came out of your mother's. This should not determine how much freedom you get. You should be able to come here, but you also are not entitled to anything. You're not entitled to vote in this country. You're not entitled to receive any welfare. You are not entitled to anything other than the opportunity.
And you're right, Martha, that would end the gravy train almost immediately. Tyler, your take. Build a wall or not?
All right. Now the mic is on. Okay. So two things. So number one, there's the welfare state and there's open borders. Pick one. You can't have both. And then the second thing, we have a two-tiered immigration system. On the one hand, it's incredibly hard. Let's say you're some brilliant graduate from, you know, some school in New Delhi. You know, for you to try and get a visa to come over here and work at Google or Facebook and enrich the American economy, that is so hard for you to do. And yet, under, you know, the current administration, just throw your passport at the border, walk on over, everything's fine. That to me makes no sense. If we're going to have an immigration policy, let's have it at least be a sane policy where people who want to enrich our country, it's easy for them to get here and be, you know, law-abiding, tax-paying citizens, you know, who are going to enrich the country. But the current system makes no sense. So that's my take.
I agree.
Ahead, I mean, it's just the problem with what you're saying, though, is that the government somehow is going to be able to do a better job than the government is currently doing. And we know that everything the government touches turns to shit. So honestly, you know, I'm not okay with the government deciding who can come into this country and who can't. And that's basically what we are advocating there. So I know that I'm the crazy libertarian who believes in open borders, but I just can't advocate for the government to have control over who can come in. If you want to have some immigration policy, the first thing we need to do is, where is that person intending to live? And let's at least let that community decide, do we want this person or not? Because honestly, one central power, one all-knowing entity that is the United States government making this decision for us doesn't fly well for me. So again, right. I'm going back to the free market of ideas, and I just can't say that they have.
I agree with Martha in theory, but at the end of the day, this is why we elect the politicians, and we as a people care more for looking at Kim Kardashian's tush than knowing what the politicians are doing. So at the end of the day, when it comes to immigration, I truly believe we are at fault because we're electing these bureaucrats who are screwing it up. It's easy to say the government can't do anything right because it's true. But who's the one who keeps reelecting that politician 80% of the time? So there comes a point that I think Tyler's right. I agree with your concept. But at the end of the day, because we have to have a free flow. That's what we get. I mean, these poor Haitians, they will go 500 miles to get to Florida and the land of opportunity versus going 50 miles to go to the working man's paradise, Cuba, you know, under Castro. So that alone talks about how others outside view us. Guys, we have rushed through this. We started out a little sterile, meaning I asked the questions, proper answer, and then it got feisty there thanks to Martha and her Latina ways there. And I was looking for that in a way because I'm a Latino too. But I want to thank you both. Tyler, real quick, my producer says we're running out of time. Only have a few minutes. Tyler, real quick, where can people find you? And then Martha.
Yes, thank you so much. So you can find the San Diego Libertarian Party on the website X, formerly known as Twitter. And so let me pull up our link right here. You can find us at SD Libertarian. And my name is Tyler Collins, and I am the chair of the San Diego Libertarian Party.
Right, and they have a meeting on the 22nd, people. So you got time to sit there, go check out the site, and check out their meeting. Yeah. Señorita Martha.
So, yes, people can find me there. It's on the screen at Bueno for Miami on X, Twitter, and, of course, Instagram with the same.
Outstanding. And give me 30 seconds. I'm going to sign us off here. To everybody else, thank you for listening. I know this is a conservative podcast, and I know we had two libertarians. Before I forget, I proudly was at the Libertarian California Convention with Tyler. I did hear RFK Jr. speak. So, yes, I have been to both conventions. But Thank you for listening to everybody. You can find this podcast at grumblingsmedia.com as well as our other podcasts. You can find us on our social media outlets at YouTube, at Rumble, at traditional podcast outlets like Apple, Spotify, Pandora, and Google. So thank you for taking the time to listen to us for these past 2 hours. And until next time, my friends, I bid you adieu.